Hello, everyone, and welcome to an all-new episode of Insurance Uncovered. This podcast is produced by the National Association of Mutual Insurance Companies and is your source for insurance news and perspective from thought leaders in the property casualty insurance industry. I'm your host, Kathy Imus, and today we're uncovering Equitable Opportunities. The National African American Insurance Association's Ngozi Anaji challenges insurers to address the industry's talent gap with better branding. Plus, an anti-ESG bill in Texas draws industry opposition. How the legislation could shake a bedrock principle of insurance. NAMIC recently testified against a Texas bill that would ban insurers from using a customer's environmental, social, and governance score when establishing rates. The legislation would also prohibit the use of customers' diversity, equity, and inclusion factors. While the original bill applied only to rating, substitute language would also apply to coverage decisions and prevent non-coverage of specific industries, including oil and gas. NAMIC AVP of State Affairs John Schnautz testified in Austin before the House Insurance Committee to explain the industry's concerns.
I do want to clarify, too, it's been talked around a little bit, but I just want to crystallize it. So as to at least property and casualty lines of insurance, which is all I know anything about here, the law already prohibits rating that has no basis in sound actuarial principles or does not bear a reasonable relationship to the expected loss and expense experience among risks. That's existing law. That is already unfair discrimination. Now, Chairman Oliverson, a lot of what I've heard you describe about the bill today is trying to reinforce that concept. And if that's what the bill is doing, again, we think that's already the law. So obviously, we can get to a place that we can be comfortable with that as to rating. And we want to continue the conversation there. Appreciate what we've talked about so far. The second issue, the bill doesn't make any attempt to define what ESG is. And I'm not saying it's an easy concept to define, but it really just says you can't use an ESG score. The words conceptually are pretty broad, and I am concerned about how they're going to be interpreted in different quarters. You can think of things that would fall within the description of environmental, social, and governance that might be completely legitimate rating and underwriting considerations that we think the bill might endanger.
The bill remains pending following that hearing. Committee chair and bill sponsor Representative Tom Oliverson offered to continue working with NAMIC to address concerns with the bill's language. The Biden administration has announced a new award of $197 million for wildfire resilience through bipartisan infrastructure law funds. The funding will help more than 100 at-risk communities in 22 states. These funds will help strengthen community wildfire plans or existing resilience activities like brush removal. As the president noted in his State of the Union last month, the changing climate has caused an increase in the number of wildfires that burn across the American West each year, often devastating disadvantaged communities in high-risk areas. Last year alone, nearly 70,000 fires burned over 7.5 million acres. The Department of Housing and Urban Development late last week submitted a final rule for publication in the Federal Register that would restore the department's 2013 discriminatory effects rule. While NAMIC and its member companies vehemently oppose illegal discrimination, NAMIC has led opposition to this rule for a decade. The 2013 rule would significantly disrupt the ability of property casualty insurance companies to assign risk, is duplicative of state regulations, misunderstands the mechanics of insurance, and is not supported by any existing cases. With publication of the rule set, however, NAMIC's long-standing challenge to the rule in federal district court may proceed with a ruling from the judge. The National African American Insurance Association has been working for decades to advocate for more diverse environments and culture within the insurance industry. The organization is dedicated to providing employers with resources for how to do that and for creating professional development opportunities for Black professionals. On today's Unscripted, NAMIC CEO Neil Aldrich talks with NIA National Board member Ngozi Anaji as she challenges insurers to address the company's talent issues through better branding.
We're joined today on the podcast with Byengozi Inaji. She's a member of the National African American Insurance Association. She's also a 25-year veteran of the insurance industry and principal at ACO Brokerage, a recent recipient of the Business Insurance's Alondo Herndon Award for her dedication to supporting DE&I efforts in the insurance industry. So today we're going to talk a little bit about diversity efforts with Ngozi. We're going to talk about her own story, but also a little bit about the National African American Insurance Association and what that group is up to. And we have a lot of ground to cover today. So welcome and thanks for joining me today.
It is definitely a pleasure, Neil. Thank you. I'm actually joining you from Nashville, where I'm a professor at Fisk University, hence my Fisk paraphernalia. So no, it's
great.
A pleasure.
No, great. And we're glad to have you. So let's start with your background and we can talk a little bit. I want to talk a little bit about you and your background. And then I want to talk about NAIA, the National African American Insurance Association, and what it's up to. So let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about your background, how you got in the industry, all that kind of stuff.
So I love my story about how I got into the industry. Neil, I'm a Gen Xer. So oftentimes when you talk
Me
to
too.
Gen Xers, right, you are too. You know, we kind of fall into the insurance industry, right? That's the theme. I think 99.9% of us fell into the insurance industry. But I'm that 0.01% that was intentional about being in the insurance. I know, right? But I owe it all to my father. And that's the beautiful story here. My dad's Nigerian, so I'm first generation. He was an immigrant to the U.S. And if you know anything about most African countries, even though they are transitioning, you know, women are very much domesticated, you know, in the home, right? And so when he came to the U.S., he was very intentional about creating, you know, spaces and the foundation for us to have long-lasting careers where we can be sustainable. And so he handpicked each one, meaning I have two sisters, he handpicked each one of our professions, or our industries, rather. And so at the time, I was a sophomore in high school. He knew I liked math. He knew that, you know, I was very analytical. He was like, you're going to be an actuary. Now, Neil, I didn't even know how to spell actuary. I didn't even know what it was.
Right.
But I lived in a household where when dad says something, you say yes, right? And so that kind of started my journey. Ironically, I will add, he handpicked healthcare for another sister and engineering for another, my third sister. And we were all in the same industry that we started off with 20 to 25 years later. So I think he did a good job. I think
he did. He should have been like a career counselor or something.
I know.
For everybody. Yeah.
Definitely. So here I am 25 years later, still in the industry. Now, I didn't pass any of those exams, so I didn't formally become an actuary, but started my career. I don't know if you know the name of this company. I'm sure you do. St. Paul Insurance Company.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. One of the foundational institutions within our industry no longer exists or transitioned into Travelers, but that's where I started my underwriting career. From then, I've been doing underwriting, large brokerage, and now own an independent agency. So,
well, that's a great story. You are one of the few. Although the one area that maybe is intentional about getting into the industry are the actuaries.
Yes, that's true.
But you don't. The podcast. This is like bad radio. The podcast listeners don't see the video of us talking, but you don't look like a regular actuary either. So that's, you know. I know there's lots of good actuary jokes out there. Well, what is the old standby? The actuaries are accountants without a sense of humor, right?
Right.
But you I can already tell you don't really fit that mold. So that's a great story for sure. Now,
you're
also involved in the National African American Insurance Association.
Yes. Naya. Yes.
So talk a little bit about that and how you got involved in there, what the organization does. That's something listeners may not know much about.
I appreciate that as well. So NAIA, the National African American Insurance Association, is really focused on simply diversifying the insurance industry and doing so by supporting Black insurance professionals across the spectrum, across the industry. And so I sit as a secretary of the executive board of the national organization. I also chair the Agent Engagement and Development Committee that we launched a few years ago. And so, you know, my experience within NAIA has been, it's been a beautiful experience. I started as just a member really looking for a way to kind of just, you know, make my resume look better, right? Be a member of a trade organization, right? But I kind of caught the bug. I caught the bug and was really supportive of the advocacy work they do, not only around creating more diverse environments and cultures, but resources and support that they give employers on how to do that, but then also the professional development, the spaces and places that they create for Black insurance professionals just became just a great opportunity for me to get involved. And so I started my journey with them as a member, like I said, but then grew to be the inaugural president of the Greater Hartford chapter of NIA. And then, like I said, now sit on the national board. But it's a great organization. We have 20 plus chapters across the country. We have over 1,700 members and growing. And so that's really exciting to see where NIA will go in the next 3 to 5 years.
Well, that's great. We at NAMIC, you know, have had some conversations with NIA about exploring some potential things we could work on together. We have a foundation here at NAMIC that we give scholarships to students who are studying insurance-related majors in universities. And so we've been trying to find ways to use that scholarship effort to enhance the diversity of the industry. It's really great. I am completely shocked by the number of minority students and women students that have been scholarship winners. We've only been doing this about 3 or 4 years now. But it's the students coming up that are actually studying risk-related fields don't look like the people that are currently working in the insurance industry, which is a good thing for our industry. And so we're hopeful we can work with NIA to continue to promote the word about that and also just work together to talk about diversity efforts in the industry. It's been top of mind for many people for a long while. It's certainly something that the industry, I think the industry deserves credit for recognizing that it needs to become more diverse. I think it probably has a long way to go to get more diverse. But I do think that the industry, you know, is aware of that and is taking strides to do so. So let's talk a little bit about that specifically here. I know you particularly with your brokerage have sort of used it as the leverage platform to help with diversity efforts. What are some things companies can look at? What would you recommend if you were talking to companies about diversity programs, et cetera? What would you talk about there?
So it's a great question, Neil, because I do think in this conversation, in this new world that we're entering into, and I do say new because, again, to your point, I think our industry specifically is becoming more intentional about its efforts, right? And understanding, you know, we go back to that word business imperative, that the impact on our business can be great, right? Not just profitability, but in other ways. And so as employers start to think about diversity, I would encourage them to not for them to think of it as a race, but definitely as a marathon and a journey. We just referenced, we're Gen Xers, right? Like, you know, the generations that will come after us are going to look different than we look today. And that will continue to happen over time. That will never stop. And so when we think about diversity, we have to think about the fact that we will be doing this, if we do it right, forever, right? As our society, our children's children come into the workforce, we will be forever, you know, changing and morphing and transitioning into to you know, bring to them the equitable opportunities that they need. So that'd be number one. But I would also say that organizations also need to do the work around making sure, right, that individuals are supported in a way that, again, we are talking about equity, not equality. Because I think oftentimes when we look at equality is easy. I often compare it to Oprah Winfrey. Now, I love Oprah, right? Like, I watched her all the time. But if you have ever watched her daytime show, you know, here's a car, you get a car, everyone gets a car, right? And to me, that's equality. And that's easy to do, right? You hand out the same thing to everybody. But what equity requires us to do is do a lot more work, right? Because when you start to say, hey, you need a car, I'm going to give you a car, but do you need a minivan or do you want a sports car, right? When we start to really identify what the needs are and customize the give, then that's a lot more work. And so I think part of what I would say to organizations is recognizing, yes, it is going to be a lot more work than just handing out a car to everyone. but we will be better off for it. So we do have to look at the bigger picture and just recognize that, again, we're not in here for the short run. We're in here for the long, long, long haul. And definitely our industry will be better off for it.
Yeah, it's an interesting perspective for certain. And I know we spent a lot of time as an industry talking about generational changes. Mm-hmm. Frankly, I'm a little tired of talking. I'm a typical Gen Xer. I'm tired of talking about the other generations and why they just can't kind of do what we did, right? But the diversity part of that, I think it's the industry to me, and this was explained to me actually by somebody at NIA, which is one of the biggest challenges that we have is your dad was probably not only was an exception in many ways, it sounds like, but many minority people, their parents did not work in this industry or their grandparents did not work in this industry. And so when they think about potential career paths, it's not even on the list.
Right.
And that's, I do think when you talk about the long haul here, I do think the kind of changes that the industry is making now can lead to that connection down the road. Because hopefully you do have more parents beginning to work in this industry down, you know, people don't even have kids yet that are, you know, going to work in this industry, that then it becomes a more viable option. Because we know for a fact the industry needs more talent, and lots of opportunities for lots of people. And so there's plenty of places for people to grow here, but we have to make that connection. And I think that's just a really important conversation here. I think the companies are getting better at it. I think they've got a lot to learn. Have you seen anything? So you talked a little bit about what you think companies can do in terms of taking this long view and this journey, kind, which I think is a really important thing, because I do think insurance companies are very, they're financial creatures. And they're used to having the annual statement, and they're right. used to sort of seeing what the numbers are. And this doesn't really fit that model very well. Are there mistakes that you've seen companies make that maybe others could avoid?
Oftentimes, I think with these diversity efforts, right, it becomes a function of checking the box, right? All because XYZ insurance company has a diversity, you know, head, we have to have one. Or all because, you know, XYZ company has a ERG, we have to have one. I often say, not only, you know, as within my role within NIA, but also as a consultant, is that if you've seen one diversity program, you've seen one diversity program, right? Like, it's almost going back to the core of what diversity is, right? Around customizing and making sure that you're equitable. And so I often shy away from like best practices or benchmarking, right? Yeah. Because then we start to kind of, you know, just paint, you know, check the box because someone else is doing it versus really looking at our organizations and say, what do we need? What is our makeup, right? Yeah. But then not only what is our makeup looking internally, but what is our customer base? Because ultimately, if you're doing it right, whatever you're doing internally around diversity will show up, right, with your customers, with your vendors, with your communities that you serve. And so that, to me, that's the business imperative. How do we make sure that what we're doing internally shows up externally? So, you know, I think the number one mistake I see is for companies just to say, hey, we're going to do this because, you know, hey, everyone is doing it.
Yeah.
Rather than really taking a look at what they need and how they make sure that what they need is showing up in whatever effort it is, right? Whatever that looks like. Not every organization needs an ERG. Right. Because there might be size, scope, whatever community, different factors that impact that. So just asking companies to be a little bit more thoughtful around how they approach their strategies around DEI.
Yeah, that is really, I think, an excellent point, because in our membership, you know, we have great big companies and really small companies.
Right.
And, you know, we may have companies that have, you know, 15 employees. They're going to have a very different approach to this than a very large enterprise will. And they should
have a
different approach to it. But I think ultimately, you know, you're right, which is, I mean, we're doing this. These are business enterprises. Mm-hmm. Hopefully there's a positive business outcome to this.
That's right.
And fitting it to their circumstance, I think, is really an important message for those in the industry to hear, because I'm not sure, I think you're right. I'm not sure to date, it's been more about, I think, trying to have the, do you have these pieces on the checklist, and less about what works for you and your circumstance.
Neil, I think it's also important for us to realize that even those efforts, like I said, have an external impact. But I think oftentimes as companies, we get caught up with the activity, right? Yeah. We just got to do something. We just got to do something. But then also realizing that, you know, all because we're doing something, again, what is the true impact look like? And so I often challenge companies around thinking about diversity in the sense of underwriting, in the sense of, you know, rate making. What does it look like when we do claims management? Because that diversity shows up there too, right? So when we're underwriting a risk, do our biases show up when we're looking at the application, we see the zip code? Do our biases show up when we, you know, look at the answer to a response to a question, right? And then even, like I said, around claims management, you know, I've been working to really have claims professionals realize that when they are out in the field working with clients and customers, what does that interaction look like? Right? Are your biases showing up there too? Yeah. Because that's almost sometimes the first impression that claimants have, right, around the insurance companies that they work with, is that adjuster. And how do we make them more aware of their role in the diversity strategy as it relates to their interactions with their customer base?
That's really a great message. And like I said, it's important for a lot of reasons, but hopefully, I used to have an old mentor that used to tell me, you know, never confuse motion with progress.
Right.
and there is a lot of motion, right, around this. There is a lot of motion. I think it's important for us to make sure that we establish what is progress here and what does it mm-hmm. look like. And I think that's a really great message for the industry to hear. Well, listen, we've covered a lot of ground today. You and I could talk for a long time, but I really appreciate you joining us. I appreciate your efforts with NIAA, and hopefully the two organizations can continue to work together to help spread some of this message. And hopefully others will be interested in your story too. Like I said, you're a unique creature here by being somebody who intentionally wanted to be in the industry and is. So that's a great story in and of itself, because you are right. Most people have just sort of, I accidentally started working for this company and I've been here for 30 years.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, No, I appreciate it, Neil. If you don't mind me just saying one more thing to our audience here, you know, I really want to challenge our industry to think about how we look at talent, not so much of a talent gap, but a branding issue. And so I want the audience to realize that when we talk to, whether it's the next generation, whether it's someone who's experienced coming into our industry fresh, that we need to think about our industry as being sexy, as being the best industry that there is, and not start off our conversations like, well, I fell into it. But part of the beauty of being a 30-year, you know, veteran of the industry, or 25 or 20, is that you stayed in the industry for a reason.
I couldn't agree with you more. There's something for everybody in this industry.
It is.
That's an excellent point. We also believe, you know, mutual companies, since we're NAMIC, you know, we think they have a connection to community that is a little different than others, and people can find those connections through their employer in that regard here. So I think mutual companies are well positioned to share that exact message you're talking about why it's such an interesting industry and so vital to the economy. And, you know, why going forward is an attractive place to work, no doubt. So listen, thanks again. Really appreciate
it. Thank you.
Enjoyed meeting you. Enjoyed the conversation. And hopefully our paths will cross again soon. Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's a wrap for this week's episode of Insurance Uncovered. We'll be back again on April 5th with more insurance news and perspective. So until next time, I'm Kathy Imus. Have a great day.